Let's Talk here on a Thursday morning. Jeff Byers, Scott Giese with you, and well, we've got lots of political discussion coming up throughout this entire hour. There should be some fun. I'll let you take it away here, Mr. Giese.
All right, here we are in the squared circle. All right, no, we're not doing that, okay? This is a conversation.
Yes.
Not a debate, per se, a conversation. Now, this is something we started, oh, it was like a year ago, and I sort of did it on a whim when I reached out to the Penn State College Democrats and the College Republicans. Back then, we had them on one at a time. And one of our guests we've had before, the other, I could have sworn war we've had him on, but maybe not. So let's introduce our guests. All right, first off, we have Baybars Charkas, who is in charge of the Penn State College Democrats. Baybars, good morning.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having me.
And we have Ryan Klein, who is in charge of the Penn State College Republicans. Ryan, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And I swear, Ryan, we have not had you as part of this feature before.
As far as I know, or as far as I can recall.
Okay, I could have swore we've had you, but I mean, we've had other people from both of your groups to talk about the issues. Now, that was before the election. Now it's after the election. Oh, what fun we're having. Okay. First off, let's find out about each of you. And Ryan, we'll start with you because you're the rookie. We'll call you the rookie. Tell us something about yourself. Like what class are you in? What are you studying? What are your aspirations? You know, are they political? Are they something else? Tell us about you.
Yeah, so I'm Ryan Klein. I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania. I'm a senior here at Penn State studying political science and history. And after I graduate, I'm looking to go to Capitol Hill to pursue some employment opportunities.
Okay, they want to cut jobs in Washington. Are there employment opportunities?
I'd like to think so. I mean, Congress, they have a pretty clear-cut mandate for what jobs they need filled, where, you know, I understand in the bureaucracy that why they would want to cut certain jobs. I think on the Hill, though, like these congressional offices need all of their workforce to, you know, properly function and serve the American people.
Okay, that might be a question for later in the hour. Guy wants to get a job in Washington. All right. Baybars, now we've talked to you before. Same question. Tell us about you. What class are you in? What are you studying and so on? Future aspirations? What do you want to do?
So I'm a triple major in political science, French, and Russian. After university, I'm not too sure what I want to do. I'd like to go abroad, take a gap year to teach English in France. After that, I'd like to pursue some kind of master's or PhD, end up working either in international aid, development, international politics, potentially journalism. Not too sure, but in that rough area, I'd say.
Okay, folks, I'm with two really smart guys. I'm feeling dumb as a brick here. I mean, holy smokes. I remember you. Triple major. Russian is one of those. Well, you know, we're talking to Russia right now about, I don't know, stuff. Does that ever come up in your class? If you're studying Russian here, does that ever come up in your classes? What's going on in Ukraine and all that?
Oh yeah, it comes up a lot, and even when it doesn't come up directly, you can tell it's fomenting in the background. So yeah, it's a big issue, obviously, with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the first major land war in Europe since the Second World War. So yeah, it's something that we talk about and that we think about a lot.
Okay. All right, now, gentlemen, we are, let's see, February, December, that'd be carry the one, 3 months since the election. It's been an interesting 3 months. Oh, okay, Baybars, we're going to start with you. He's saying, oh, yeah. All right. What do you think about just an open-ended general question about these last 3 months? When you take a look at what's happened in the last 3 months, for you, you're the Democrat representative, what comes to mind?
Well, obviously, we took an electoral beating. There's no two ways of putting it. I was not happy with the result. I'm still very displeased with the result. But to be quite honest, I sort of saw it coming. I thought that the shambolic replacement of Joe Biden by Kamala Harris did major damage to the party, and I didn't think that Kamala Harris was able to put forward a pragmatic, a defensible vision for the party. So I think that, especially towards the end of the election, I was very much dreading the victory of Donald Trump, and that's what happened. Yeah.
Okay, shambolic sounds like something from, who's that movie character? It's a comedy. What's his name? What's it? No, no, not Mr. Bean. No, he was a secret agent. What's his name? No, not the Pink Panther. No, forget it. Anyway, shambolic is a word I don't hear that often, but I remember, yeah, baby, that guy. What was his name? Who's that dude? Who's that guy? Yes, he plays a goofy British agent. He was very... Ironhead, who am I thinking about?
Are you talking about Austin Powers?
Austin Powers!
Oh, my God.
Austin Powers is shambolic. Now, that's a real, if you will, nasty term, Baybars, about your own party. I mean, and you felt this, what, back in the fall?
Yeah, I mean, look, it is a nasty, you can call it a nasty term, but I think it's an accurate term. I had the pleasure, I had the responsibility of attending the Democratic National Convention in Chicago at the time. And when I was there, I was very shocked to hear that the three issues that were talked about were essentially, one, how bad Donald Trump is, two, how great Joe Biden's term was, and three, Kamala Harris's childhood. And in the time that I was there, in the 16 hours that I sat and listened to people speak, because I attended it for 4 days, people spoke from roughly 4.5 to 5 hours. In that time, I only really heard two serious policy proposals. One was the child tax credit, and one was the national abortion, the law to essentially install abortion rights in national law. That was the only thing that I really heard from my party of things that they wanted to do. Now, if you listen to somebody like Donald Trump, as much as I might excoriate Donald Trump, as much as I might hate him, you listen to him and he says, I think that ABC is wrong with the United States and I propose XYZ solutions. He says, I think that we have too many immigrants or too many Mexicans, blah, 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 blah. I think that we should build a wall. Not to say that's a good policy proposal, but it's a vision. And when voters hear that, I think that they see, oh, like this individual stands for something. Whereas the Democrats, they've sort of just produced platitudes and to be, as a Democrat, as a liberal, as a progressive, I find that to be incredibly disappointing.
Very interesting. All right. Okay, now, Ryan, let's swing over to your side. Your guy won. All right. And the last 3 months have been very interesting. What, open-ended, when you think about the last 3 months, what do you think about?
Well, I mean, first off, I think it's been great fun, but I would say that in the last, you know, couple months, our voters and the American people have gotten what they voted for. You know, we had a pretty good, electoral victory back in November, and since then we've seen the policy proposals that have been, you know, talked about on the campaign trail, at least in very small parts in this early stage of the administration, put into action. We've seen executive orders to combat inflation. We've seen executive orders to combat immigration issues. Two of the biggest issues that Donald Trump, Dave McCormick, and the entire Republican ticket here in Pennsylvania ran on. And so I think there's been a lot of, you know, productive movement in the right direction for the country and for the American people.
Okay. Define right direction. What direction should that be, Ryan?
Well, I mean, I would say, you know, particularly on the issue of immigration. I mean, you know, recently President Trump signed the Laken Riley Act into law, which, you know, Laken Riley was a Georgia college student no older than Baybars and I who was brutally murdered by an illegal immigrant. You know, that kind of policy is preventing those events from happening in the future. It was a tragedy. It should have never happened. And there were Senate Democrats who voted against that bill, which to me was a very common sense bill. You know, you have, you know, military forces deployed at the southern border to ensure that, you know, we can, you know, reduce the number of illegal crossings, because the people that have been caught that are currently in the United States, many of them have peddled drugs in here. Many of them have committed violent crimes. We need them out of our country. And I think that for the safety of the American people, Donald Trump has delivered.
All right. Now, I've got an immigration question for both of you later on. Mr. Ironhead, I know your favorite question. You like the top three. You want to go ahead and ask it. I don't want to steal your thunder.
Sure. No, just the, from your perspective, what are the top three issues facing our country right now that you'd like to see your party's leaders address?
All right, Ryan, let's start with you.
Well, I mean, I touched on it a little bit, but immigration. But I would say my other two and the ones that I would really talk about is foreign policy, which I know we've seen some motion on. But the one that I think I care most about, and I would say most people would, is the economy. You know, I come from a middle-class background, and so I've seen, you know, good economic times really help my family and those around us. I've seen bad economic times specifically in the last 4 years where, you know, my parents and families and the community that I grew up in struggle to make ends meet. And so, you know, over the next 4 years with Donald Trump and J.D. Vance in office, I want to see them really work to bring prices down for the average American, you know, lower the inflation rates, reduce the national debt, all things that are going to make life better for everyday Americans.
All right. Baybars, top three, over to you.
My top three issues are climate change, artificial intelligence, and foreign policy.
Explain why.
Climate change and artificial intelligence, because I think that they're the greatest challenges that we're facing this century. Climate change and artificial intelligence are two areas where governments, private actors are not doing enough to address serious issues that I think exist in both fields. Both climate change and artificial intelligence have the potential to bring about a lot of very negative change in this country and around the world. And unfortunately, people are not really working towards solutions. As for foreign policy, look, the United States is the global hegemon. We have an empire-like control of what happens around this world, and I think that it's very important that we use that influence and that control wisely, and we're not doing that. And right now we're seeing the rise of what you might call 19th century geopolitical rivalries between empires. So I think that that's very concerning, and it's something that I want to address.
All right, I've got a follow-up. But Jeff, do you got one, or are you good?
I would love to know from both of you just your level of optimism right now for the future of the country. A very broad, open-ended question, and you can answer it as you choose. But your overall feeling about the future of the United States, and you can take it as short-term, long-term. I'm just genuinely curious. You're thinking about the future of the United States, and you're thinking what?
All right, Baybars, let's start with you.
I'd be lying to you if I said that I wasn't deeply pessimistic. And I don't relish in saying that, but that's the truth. I mean, look, I'll take the issues that I've mentioned. We're seeing an increase in natural disasters, be that in California, be that in North Carolina, be that in Florida, with abounding hurricanes, forest fires, etc. All of that's due to climate change. And to be quite honest, we're somewhat lucky, and we will be lucky here in North America, that we live in a rich, developed country that's rather high, in terms of elevation, whereas a lot of the people that will be hit most by climate change and its negative effects are paradoxically and tragically the people that contributed the least to it. So you're thinking people in sub-Saharan Africa. But it'll impact us greatly. In terms of artificial intelligence, look, we're barreling towards a kind of world and a kind of civilizational transformation that we haven't seen arguably since the Industrial Revolution, but probably since the development of fire. What this means for our civilization, what it means for humanity, what it means for our jobs, what it means for the survival of human civilization as we currently know it, all that could potentially be imperiled by artificial intelligence. Look, the godfather of artificial intelligence, a man named Geoffrey Hinton, a man who worked with Google to develop their artificial intelligence, the man who more or less is credited with founding the field, is telling us that these machines have the potential to become super intelligent, that they have the potential to dominate humanity, and that they have the potential to put an end to human civilization. I mean, I can't think of a single person on the face of this planet who's more qualified to talk about this issue. And if he's putting out that warning, I think that that's a cause for concern. Foreign policy. Look, I think that there's an argument to say that the United States is in decline. It's in decline in terms of China. I think that there's an argument to say that a lot of the policies that we're seeing, particularly with Donald Trump, is a reaction. It's not the cause, but it's a reaction of that decline. And I'm quite frankly, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that there will be a war, that there could be a war between us and Iran, between us and Russia, between us and China. Who knows what the world will portend? But in sum, I am very pessimistic.
All right. Let's swing over to Ryan, who's smiling at me right now. So I'm not sure what that means. Your thought.
Well, I'm certainly an optimist by nature, and I'm an optimist by what I'm seeing. I mean, on my top three issues, I mean, I've touched on, you know, we're seeing progress with immigration. On foreign policy, just this week, we've seen Mark Fogel, you know, be returned from a Russian prison. This is something that Joe Biden couldn't do in 4 years. Donald Trump did it in 3 weeks. And, you know, during his first term in office, we saw no new wars. We've seen, you know, Israel and Hamas come to the table. We've seen Russia and Ukraine come to the negotiating table. And so I think that, you know, diplomacy is the answer in a lot of these issues. And I think we're seeing a lot of productive, you know, conversations forward on how to end these wars and to establish a world peace with these major powers fighting each other. And as for the economy, we've seen executive orders targeted at lowering inflation. And I know that, you know, on the campaign trail, Donald Trump talked about lowering prices. And now, you know, the reaction from the Democrats is, well, prices haven't gone down yet. Well, of course it hasn't. It's been 3 weeks. But I'm very optimistic that with, you know, executive orders, with legislation through the Republican House and Senate, we're going to see real substantive, you know, acts and bills to bring down the prices for everyday Americans and make the economy work again for middle America.
All right. Now, we'll take a break in a moment. Gentlemen, I'm disappointed in both of you, okay, about these top issues. And I've mentioned this before, maybe not with the two of you, but with other people that from your groups that we had like back in the fall and so on. All right, Scott here, I'm semi-old. Okay, I'm kind of old. You could add your two ages together and I'm still old. All right, it's terrible. I think if I were a young person, the number one issue by a mile is not climate change. It is not immigration. It is not the economy. It is not foreign affairs. The number one issue, if I'm a young person, is this almost now $37 trillion federal debt, which has been careening out of control. And I'll be dead when this thing blows up. You won't be. My daughters won't be. My grandkids won't be. And it's going to blow up in your face. And it's going to be really ugly. Really bad. Now, Brian, I'll start with you briefly. Am I crazy? And maybe I'm a pessimist. Something has got to be done about this federal debt, cutting back on federal spending so that we don't spend ourselves into oblivion, which is what we've been doing for a bunch of years now. What do you think?
Well, I mean, no, you're not crazy. I think it's a concern of many in the Republican Party. I mean, I constantly see, you know, a lot of conservative, like very conservative, you know, members of Congress, governors, talking about that we need to reduce federal spending. And I tend to agree with that. And I think that that's exactly the purpose of Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency. We're looking to cut wasteful spending from the bureaucracy. We're getting rid of programs that aren't working or that aren't doing what they're supposed to be. And we want to return that money to the hardworking American people. And we also want to pay our bills. $37 trillion of debt is nothing to be happy about. We shouldn't be smiling ear to ear about that number. And I think that it's going to take years worth of substantive measures to lower that price. But I think that, you know, by cutting spending in the government, that's a great way to address this issue.
All right, Baybars, what's your thought on that?
I don't think that you're being crazy, but I think that it's important to put things into perspective. The first time that we had parity in inflows and outflows in the government was not the first time, the last time, excuse me, was under Bill Clinton. That was in the 90s. In the 2000s, the national debt shot up under George W. Bush because of the Iraq war. Under Obama, it still increased, but the rate of increase went down. Under Trump, especially towards the last year, it shot up, obviously due to COVID. I don't particularly blame him for that. And then it's continued to go up under Biden. Who knows where it'll go now? Now, look, is it a potential concern? Yeah, I think so. Like the fact that we owe $37 trillion in debt, that's what, 1.5 times the size of our GDP. Yeah, I think that that's an issue of potential concern. But it's important to note that the government's not like you and me. The government can afford to borrow and to borrow and to borrow at a certain point, and still not have to pay it off indefinitely. Now, look, there will always be a point where we have to pay off. We have to pay off not only the debt that we've incurred, but the interest on the debt as well. And I agree with Ryan that we should look for ways to make the government run more efficiently, to run more beneficially. But if you want to take the example of DOGE, for instance, yeah, you're cutting a lot of programs like USAID, or you're gutting the Department of Education, you're gutting the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, but then you're also adding lots and lots of money in other directions, so in the Department of Defense, for instance. So is it really going to even out? We don't really know yet, because it's only been 24 days of Donald Trump. So that remains to be seen. But yeah, look, it is potentially an issue. It deserves to be tackled, but I don't agree that it's the end all be all, and it's not my top priority, quite frankly.
Okay, all right. Let's take our break here. All right, we got interesting views from our two gentlemen, Ryan Klein from the College Republicans, and Baybars Charkas from the College Democrats. Yes, I've got a bunch more questions. I think the Ironhead does too. And again, no punches thrown so far, so we're actually doing quite well. That's great. Ironhead, take it away.
Civil discussion. Go figure. It can be done. See, we told you. We will have much more of the civil discussion coming up after this timeout on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox.
for quality you can see and wear. Remember PAMP for customized t-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
The Center Hall Farm Store is proud to serve our community as a small family business that provides big-time service. Folks, you can still stock up on those wood pellets this winter. The Center Hall Farm Store makes its own horse, cow, pig, chicken, and bird feeds and has a great variety of pet feeds for your needs. Open weekdays from 8 to 4 and Saturday from 8 to noon. Check us out at 110 Allison Street in Center Hall or on the web at centerhallfarmstore.com. That's centerhallfarmstore.com. The Center County Recycling and Refuse Authority is proud to support local sports here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. Check out our website at centercountyrecycles.org for employment opportunities, upcoming events, the authority's newsletter, and details on what can and can't be recycled, as well as updated schedules. That's centercountyrecycles.org. Once again, the website is centercountyrecycles.org.
The days are getting longer and sooner than you think. The lawn will need mowed, so decisions have to be made. When you roll out the old mower that just barely made it through last summer, or visit Dotter Equipment just south of Mill Hall on Route 64 and see a great selection of Kubota. Dotter Equipment offers the Kubota B or BX Series compact or subcompact tractors. Either way, with Kubota, you get the number one rated brand in durability, ownership, and the reliability of any under 100 horsepower tractor in the USA. Maybe a tractor isn't what you had in mind. How about a Kubota zero-turn mower? Something with lots of horsepower and 42 to 72 inch mower width. You can zip and zoom across your lawn with precision and ease atop a Kubota residential mower. Lawn care never felt this good. Indeed, decisions have to be made. So, to get answers to all your questions, visit Dotter Equipment, just south of Mill Hall on Route 64 for Kubota lawn care products.
The Fox!
It's Let's Talk here on a Thursday morning. Jeff Byers in the studio. Scott Giese up on the Penn State campus at the Hub this morning. And we are talking politics and getting the student perspective, a good perspective to get, I would say. And we'll send it back over to Mr. Giese.
Guys, where is everybody? I expected the room to be a little more full. There's hardly anybody here. All right? Okay, we got Ryan Klein from the College Republicans. We have Babar Charkas from the College Democrats. Ryan, what time is your next class or first class?
My first class of the day is 10:35. However, it's a little after 9. 9:05 is when the first class starts, so I imagine most people are there or they're comfortable in bed because it is crazy cold outside.
Oh, no, it's not. Oh, come on. Now, Babars, when's your first class?
My first class, I'm quite lucky. My first class is 1:35 in the afternoon.
Oh, jeez. Holy, where do I sign up? Holy smokes. Now, I tell you what, I'm going to give you guys a compliment, all right? And I bashed on you right before the break. Back in October, around the corner from where we're sitting, there's a small, we're here in the Hub, and there's a small, like an auditorium right around the corner. You two guys did a debate. And I cleared out my schedule that night, and I was actually sitting in the back of the room. All right? There were lots of tons and tons of students sitting in front of me. I thought, no, I don't want to get in that. So I'm like in the back row, and I'm just watching. All right? And it was a debate. So it was kind of a back and forth, la, la, la. I thought both of you did very well that night. I thought you both made very good points. You scored some points. Not necessarily the zingers or anything like that. But what impressed me was, one, you both made good points. Two, when the event was over, you immediately went over and shook hands. with smiles. Then all your groupies came up, all right? You both had groupies that came up and took pictures with you and all that sort of thing, which led me to believe that, yes, it is possible to debate tough subjects and make your points, you know, and then at the end, go have a beer or something like that. Are you, yeah, you guys are both old enough to have a beer, right? Okay. Got to watch out there. Sorry.
Oh, boy.
Get in trouble with the police or something. Anyway. All right. Let's talk about immigration. Now, Ryan, I'm going to start with you. First off, we don't know how many illegal immigrants there are. 10 million, 15 million, 20 million. We don't know. Okay. Do you honestly think that Trump and company, that's how I normally refer to them, Trump and company, you honestly believe they're going to round up 15 or 20 million people and send them out? I mean, do you honestly think that? What do you think's really going to happen with this situation?
Well, I mean, first off, the fact that there might be 10, 15, 20 million and we don't actually know that number, that's a shame and that's actually quite scary. I think that, you know, there's a lot of populous urban centers in the United States that I would at least argue are a very good place to start. You know, they've become sanctuary cities, like New York, for example. You know, you have a high density of people, you know, who settled there that came here illegally, and now they're just setting up shop. That's not all right. I mean, and the people that they've caught out of New York and these other major sanctuary cities have been violent criminals and people who have peddled drugs into the United States. And so I think that, you know, rounding up those people where we know that they are, that's definitely a good start. Are we necessarily going to see all of those people get rounded up, every single illegal, every last one? I don't know. I think that's a tall task. But I think if any administration can actually root out these people who have come here illegally and broken the law, it would be the Trump administration.
But Ryan, do you have any idea how much that would cost? If this would go to that nth degree, the cost would be staggering. Is it worth that kind of money?
I mean, I agree the cost would be staggering, but I think the safety of the American people should be a priority and, you know, of the United States government. Where this ends up going in the long term, I'm not quite sure, but I think we definitely need to root out what we can right now with the resources that we have.
All right, Baybars, let me toss this to you. Now, when I look at your party, the Democrat Party, they seem to be the ones out there protesting and so on for these people and so on, when I see it in the news and such. Illegal immigration or immigration in general, what should we be doing here?
Well, I don't think that Donald Trump will ever be able to deport 50 million people, nor should he deport those people. Look, illegal immigrants came to this country illegally, but they're also a backbone of our agricultural sector. So if you're concerned about the price of the peppers that you buy or the eggs that you buy, a lot of those products are produced by illegal immigrants. Look, illegal immigrants are not the demons, the rapists, the criminals that Donald Trump wants you to believe. Of course, there are many among them, just as there are many among every single group of people who do evil things. And I think that if those people are found, they should be deported. But look, the Bible tells us that in as much as ye hath done it to the least of these, your brethren, ye hath done it unto me. A lot of these people come from incredibly, incredibly difficult backgrounds. They come to the United States in hopes of a better life. And I think that, look, I'm not saying that we should open the floodgates and let any witch person come in. I'm saying that insofar as they are in, I think that we have an obligation to support them. And we have the obligation to make them part of our American dream. What exactly that looks like, I think that that's a complicated question. Like I said, I don't think that we should open the floodgates to absolutely everyone. I think that if you are an illegal immigrant, you're found to have committed a crime, you should absolutely be deported. You should be judged, and if found guilty, you should be deported. But if you're looking at what ICE is doing right now, ICE is not only just targeting criminal illegals, it's targeting people who have not done anything wrong, who've just been upstanding and just contributed to the economy. ICE has gone over ICE has gone out against people from Puerto Rico who are American citizens by default. Puerto Rico is a territory of the United States. They're just going after them because they're Hispanic. ICE has gone after Native Americans, for heaven's sake. Look, every single person here is an immigrant except for the Native Americans. So I find that to be hilariously ironic if it weren't so tragic. But that's the way that I see it. It's not a matter of just arguing for illegal immigrants just for the sake of arguing for them. It's understanding that this is an incredibly complicated and human issue, and that it deserves to be handled with tact and with humanity, not by saying, oh, well, we're just going to fill up planes with people, herd them in like sheep, and deport them back to wherever they came from.
All right, now a quick follow-up. All right, you sort of mentioned it. These people broke the law to get in here. Now, there are some people that they don't care. Just let them go. It's fine. No big deal. They broke the law. If I break the law, I get in trouble. You know, the police come after me. What should, all right, your particular view, what should happen to these people at least, even if they've done no crimes, they're just here, they're working, whatever, they still broke the law to get in here. What should happen to them?
Well, I agree that they did break the law, but I think that we should put the law into perspective. It's incredibly, incredibly difficult and incredibly, incredibly onerous for these people to come into the United States. And like I said, these people, the majority of them come from incredibly terrible conditions. I mean, conditions that not even the poorest people in the United States face. So yeah, they have broken the law, but I think that if they could demonstrate that they're positively contributing to our economy, positively contributing to the American cultural environment, then yeah, we should find a way to normalize them. That's my view.
All right, Jeff, you got something. I've got more, but how about you?
Well, I'm just curious when you look at the Baybars, I guess, is there somebody out there that you're looking at right now that, boy, if this person can get some momentum, I think this could be the future face of the, or voice, maybe more importantly, of the Democratic Party. And then a similar question, like, who do you see succeeding Trump? Is it, just kind of by default, J.D. Vance, or, you know, Ryan, who do you see as the future, maybe on the national stage of the Republican Party? But I start with Baybar, is just, is there somebody out there that you're kind of pulling for to be the next, voice here of the Democratic Party?
All right, now I had that on my list. All right, and it's still early in the game, if you will. Trump and company just took over. Is there somebody, because it seems like the Democratic Party, they're searching for somebody, and they got their hands out, like, who can we grab and so on. I don't think it's Kamala Harris. Who? Is there somebody, like, I kind of like that person?
I don't think it's Kamala Harris either. In terms of who I'm looking at, like you said, it is early. We don't know. I mean, I don't think anybody would have predicted Barack Obama in 2004 would head up the mantle in 2008. So it could be somebody that we don't even know, that we haven't heard of yet. In terms of the players that are on the ground, I'm very impressed by people like John Ossoff, a senator from Georgia. I think that he's done a lot of work. He's been able to effectively communicate. So I hope to see more out of him. I would say Tim Walz actually has impressed me lately. I think providing a robust opposition to Donald Trump. Obviously, he was the vice presidential candidate, so he's somewhat stained by the loss in 2024. But I would hope that he would be able to go far. I'm very partial to AOC. I know people always say that she's unelectable, but back in 2015, nobody would have said that, oh, Donald Trump is going to become the president of the United States. I think everybody thought that that was such an incredible long shot. In fact, I think Donald Trump thought it was an incredible long shot right up to the election. So you never know what happens. Politics, I mean, to quote the Bible again, God makes the valleys high and the mountains low. So, I mean, you never know exactly what the future will bring.
You quoted the Bible twice, Baybars, all right? I'm a guy that goes to church every week, so I guess I'm impressed. You know, there we go. All right, let's go to Ryan. Now, Ryan, we could argue right now that Donald Trump is a lame duck, because he is, all right? I know there's some yahoo in Tennessee that wants to change the Constitution or something, and you can get a third term. Scott here, I think that's a terrible idea, but that's just me, okay? So Donald Trump is kind of a lame duck of sorts. He's done in 28. Who do you see following him? I mean, he was asked, I think, in an interview the other night, you know, who's next, J.D. Vance? And he came out and said no. Which at least shocked me for a moment, like, okay, that was awfully quick. Who do you like?
Well, I mean, first to respond to that interview, I think that was a pretty pragmatic move on Trump's part, because you have to see what happens over the next couple of years. Making a preemptive endorsement 3 weeks into the term for the next presidential race is definitely not the smartest move, and it wouldn't be the best for the party should some circumstance happen that, you know, would really bind us to that decision. That said, I think J.D. Vance is the clear runaway favorite. I think, you know, he's really impressed me since he's become the vice presidential nominee and now is the vice president. I think he's represented America well in the 3 weeks that he's been in office. I think outside of him, though, I mean, if it isn't to be J.D. Vance, I think Governor DeSantis or Governor Youngkin of Florida and Virginia, respectively, I think they both have been very powerful voices in the party and on the national stage on a litany of issues that our voters care about. And so I think if it isn't J.D. Vance, I think Ron DeSantis or Glenn Youngkin would be very good choices.
All right, let me follow up on Vance. Guy's a good talker. All right, I remember the vice presidential debate. I thought Vance did very well that night. He's a good talker, which does not necessarily mean good leader. So is that all? Is it the way he talks you like? I mean, what else is it about this guy?
I mean, I like his life story. I think I can relate to that a lot. You know, he's a kid that grew up in middle America. He was very poor growing up. And, you know, he went into the Marines. He went to law school and built a business for this country and then became the vice president of the United States. I think in terms of the leadership aspect, though, I think that's exactly why Trump hasn't preemptively endorsed him. I think the next couple of years is a leadership test for J.D. Vance to see, you know, what does he do? What is he able to lead on? And how can he have a tangible impact to better the lives of the American people? If he can answer those questions and prove himself on the national stage now that he's in that stage, I think he's going to be the nominee no problem. If it's in question or it's in doubt, I think you're going to have a competitive primary in 28. But I think overwhelmingly, I would argue J.D. Vance is the favorite. I think he's going to prove himself, and I have a lot of confidence in him.
I'm not sure how you define the term Trumpian. Does the next, Ryan, we're sticking with you. Does the next person from your side need to be Trumpian? Or can they just be conservative? Because there's a difference between those two terms. What should it be?
I mean, I would say most likely it would be a healthy blend. I mean, I think whoever the nominee is will likely be endorsed by President Trump and will have to have some kind of positive and productive relationship with him. But I think that, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be, oh, they are the most Trumpian. Maybe they will, and maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe they won't. I mean, I think it's very much in flux, and I think you just need to let the process of the next few years, let the administration and its accomplishments play out before I could really be an accurate judge of whether or not the person is going to be very Trumpy or just more of a traditional conservative. But I would argue J.D. Vance is more Trumpy, and so if we're going with that, you know, term, probably more Trumpy.
All right, before we take a break, Baybars, this is a goofy question. What is the Democrat version of Trumpian? All right, Trumpian has worked. I mean, the guy got elected, worked. What should the Democrat version of Trumpian be, if you make sense of that question?
Well, look, insofar as it exists, I want nothing to do with it. I don't think that we should become Trump in order to defeat Trump. Now, there are things that we can learn from Donald Trump that I think are useful. So, such as the way that he communicates. Look, I'll say he's a very effective communicator. People always make fun of the way that he speaks, but I think that he reaches voters in a way that somebody like Kamala Harris was not able to. I think that on the face of it, he has a populist message that resonates with people. He has this earthy language that people are able to latch onto, and they're able to say, oh, okay, this man, despite the fact that he's a billionaire, he lives in New York in a giant penthouse that's gold-plated, he might be able to speak for me. Now, I think that that's just nonsense, but I do think that we as Democrats need to find someone who looks less stiff, who's able to communicate more, and who's able to put forward a better vision. So insofar as that's Trumpian on the Democratic side, sure, yeah, something like that. In terms of who would fit that list, I think that Tim Walz, I mentioned him before, he's very earthy. In terms of other people, part of my pessimism is that I don't see many candidates coming forward. I don't see an obvious choice. That's not necessarily a bad thing at this point. We have a lot of time, but I don't see that person materializing before my eyes. But no, I don't want the Democratic Party to become the Trump Party of the left, if that makes sense.
All right, before we break, he can't run again because of the two-term rule. Another Barack Obama. If there is such a person out there, is that somebody you would point for?
Why not? I mean, Barack Obama was able to touch a chord with people in a way that really no other Democratic politician has been able to. So if such a person exists, and for instance, in John Ossoff, I think that John Ossoff is somewhat Obama-esque. If that person exists, yeah. I mean, I would like somebody who has a more progressive vision than Barack Obama. Barack Obama was very good at the razzmatazz, but he was less good, I think, as a governor. So somebody who's able to put forward a genuine good vision, I would say then, yeah, that person I would vote for, and I would go to bat for.
All right, let's take that break. Now, we have a little background noise because we have another event going over here to our side, but that's okay. And, guys, we could go till noon. I could go to this afternoon. Somebody want to order Ford food from the Burger King downstairs? That would be nice. Ironhead, let's take a break here.
Let's do exactly that. You are listening to Let's Talk. We appreciate that on this Thursday morning. Looks like things are clearing up pretty nicely here. And so we will be back with the one more segment, and you do not want to miss it.
The Fox. This is the Fox. Get the feeling. Whoa. This is the Fox.
for quality you can see and wear. Remember PAMP for customized t-shirts, letterheads, envelopes, magnetic signs, and business cards. PAMP has a low minimum of 12 shirts for printing and no minimum on embroidered items. They don't charge art fees or setup fees. Pricing is simple and easy, and they have a quick turnaround. They're open Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Located at 136 South Harrison Road, Pleasant Gap. For more information, call 814-359-2447.
Come join the fun at this year's Happy Valley Comic Con, March 1st and 2nd at Nittany Valley Sports Center. Star Wars is the main theme this year, featuring actors from some of their TV shows. Dress in costume, watch for contests that weekend, come talk to artists and vendors, and meet Penn State grad Andrew Kevin Walker, the writer of the famous horror flick Seven. Get your tickets in advance and save some money at HappyValleyComicCon.com. That's HappyValleyComicCon.com. March 1st and 2nd, we'll see you at the Cantina, made possible by a grant from the Happy Valley Adventure Bureau.
When winter is at its worst, snowplow professionals need the best. That's why your local Boss dealer has the ultimate lineup of snow and ice solutions you need. Front to back, Boss leads with advanced truck plows and spreaders, compact equipment, heavy equipment, and time-saving tools to clear any surface area. Keep them open with a Boss snowplow, built to back you up.
Maxwell Truck and Equipment, 1705 East Trout Road, State College. Call them at 814-234-2672.
Like Cummings Supply Incorporated, located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, is looking to hire numerous carpenters, laborers, and operators starting immediately for the construction season. Like Cummings Supply is a reputable contractor that has been in business since 1948 and is family-owned. Like Cummings Supply specializes in building bridges, box culverts, and also performs demolition work throughout the mid-state region. Having a CDL is preferred but not necessary. Stop by their office located at 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport and fill out an application and have two forms of ID ready. Lycoming Supply is an EEO employer. You may mail a resume or visit their office at Lycoming Supply, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 between 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. for more information. Lycoming Supply Incorporated, 801 Beaver Street in Williamsport, or you may call them at 570-322-6054 today.
Recent changes to analog phone lines have increased faxing costs dramatically. With Cloud Fax Solutions from Doing Better Business, you can now have a reliable, scalable method, which is great for compliance. XM Fax integrates seamlessly with our Ricoh and all multifunctional devices and provides a secure, shared experience with automatic workflow routing. Take your faxing to the cloud with Doing Better Business. Our solutions and service teams are ranked in the top 10% of the country for customer satisfaction. Visit us today at doingbetterbusiness.com.
Let's Talk is the program here. One final segment for this Thursday. Again, it'll be Mr. Giese flying solo tomorrow here on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox. A little bit of an abbreviated show tomorrow. He will be handing it off to Todd and Norm Brown just a little before 10 o'clock, and we'll get started with our coverage of the District 6 Wrestling Championships tomorrow. Mr. Giese is up at the Hub this morning.
All right, we got a few more minutes, and again, I could go for 2 hours with these guys.
Easily.
This is a fascinating conversation here, again, with Ryan Klein from the College Republicans, Babars Charkas from the College Democrats. All right, we've only got about eight minutes left here. Guys, let's talk about education, all right? And Ryan, I'm going to start with you. All right, there's some folks, they want to get rid of the Federal Department of Education. They want to get rid of it, okay, like replace it. Send it back to the states, you know, and all that sort of stuff. Guys, I'm really torn on this one. So, Ryan, I'm going to start with you. Should they do that and why? What should they do there?
I mean, on that issue, I think, you know, states running education historically has been a very good thing for our country. You know, back before we had a federal Department of Education, we were leading the world in science education, in math education, in literature. we're not leading the world in those subjects anymore. And so I think that states know how to administer education best. And I think that, you know, on the topic of education, school choice is very important. You know, when you're looking at, you know, public school districts and even private school districts, giving, you know, students and families the opportunity to choose where they go so that they can lift their student and their child up to achieve the most in their education, I think that that is a very positive and productive Department of Education. I'm more in favor of giving states more autonomy on how to run education policy.
All right, Baybars, over to you. Department of Education, what should we do?
I think it's an absolutely absurd idea to get rid of it. Look, if you have issues with the way that the department is run, fine. Let's have that discussion. Let's talk about ways that we can improve it. But it's sort of like the debate with USAID. Instead of talking about ways that he can improve these services, he says, no, I want to tear it all down. I want to distribute the responsibilities to other people. Look, the Department of Education does a lot of very important work in this country. A lot of funding that goes to disadvantaged schools so that children that grow up poor can get at least a decent quality education, if not the same quality of education as their rich and middle class peers. A lot of that comes from the Department of Education. A lot of the standards that we set for our schools come from the Department of Education. Pell Grants, money that's distributed through to students who are in need, a lot of whom could not attend university, a lot of that is distributed through the Department of Education. Now, to be clear, it's not necessarily that all of those programs will disappear overnight if the Department of Education is gotten rid of, but a lot of those programs are imperiled because the Department of Education is even under the threat of being dismantled, not even if it would be dismantled. I think that Donald Trump has a very destructive personality. I think that he goes in and he says, I want to disrupt, I want to destroy, I want to tear this, that, and the other thing apart. I think that that's a terrible way of doing politics. I think that if you have issues with the way the Department of Education is run, fine. Let's discuss those issues. Let's come to some kind of arrangement. I don't think that the correct answer is to say, oh, I'm just going to blow the whole thing up, send it back to the 50 states, hope that each one of those 50 states finds a way to settle things, because I think that that's a disaster.
All right. Well, there's a difference of opinion there, definitely, on that one. All right. Penn State campus. Here we are. $90 million deficit. What about branch campuses? The faculty senate allegedly is going to have a vote of no confidence in 2 weeks about President Dr. Neely Bendipudi. Now, it doesn't mean she loses her job. It just means they're really unhappy. And this is their official way of saying they're really unhappy. Do your groups talk about, I don't know, Penn State politics, if you will? The faculty clearly are not happy about this. Baybars, we'll start with you. You or your group have any thoughts on that?
In terms of what's happening at the faculty senate level, I'll say that I think that the university is in a very bad position. It's in a very, very bad position. The fact that funding from the state level, from the state legislature, has been constant, and we haven't had success making that go up, coupled with the fact that it's more and more expensive to run a university like this, coupled with the fact that we have lots of buildings that are incredibly old, that have to be torn down, coupled with the fact that we have a lot of branch campuses that we have to care for, and the deficit, the $90 million that you mentioned. So Neely, Dr. Bendipudi is in a very difficult position. And I think that, look, she's very charismatic. She's very personable. We both had the pleasure of meeting with her. So I sympathize with her a lot. In terms of what I think about the Senate no confidence motion, look, to be honest, I'm not very well acquainted with the issue. I don't know what's being said. So I don't think it's my place to really comment one way or another as regards to whether this proposal is correct or whether they have a point. I'll say that it's an incredibly touchy issue, and I think that it demands a level of study and also of sympathy for both sides, because this university, the health of this university is in peril with the deficit, but also with the fact that it's becoming more and more difficult, more and more costly to run it.
All right. Over to you. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with pretty much everything Baybars just said on that. And I would clarify, I mean, you know, Dr. Bendipudi was hired, I believe it was 2 years ago now, to, you know, help cut the budget, because we have a $90 million deficit. This university is getting more expensive to run. And so I think that, you know, as the faculty senate weighs a no confidence vote, it's certainly well within their right. And, you know, if they want to do that, they're expressing their, you know, displeasure with a certain action she may or may not be taking. But as far as I'm aware, she hasn't actually taken an action. She just hasn't been clear on whether or not branch campuses are going to close. And I can sympathize with anybody who feels as though this, you know, ambiguity is not correct. It's not the right course, that she needs to be more transparent. but it is an incredibly complicated and, you know, personal decision that needs to be made. But I will say that, you know, any, you know, weighing of removing Dr. Bendapudi, whether it's through the Faculty Senate or even something that could be higher than that, I think that that's not a smart idea, given that you would just be punting the football of still solving the deficit problem to whoever could possibly succeed her. Now, I think Dr. Bendapudi on the budget has been great. I think she's been a great advocate for free speech on campus, for making sure that students are truly heard at all levels. And so I think that if there was any action against her, I think it would be a real shame for this university.
All right, Ironhead, we only got 2 minutes left. I've got a follow-up. Do you have one? I'm going to give you a shot.
No, go ahead.
Good? Okay. Yep. Very quickly, Ryan, we'll start with you. I'm just curious, tell very briefly, because we only have about 2 minutes here. How big is your group, and has your group grown since the election 3 months ago? Has there been any change?
Yeah, so we've got about 40 to 50 members, and we have grown since the election. I mean, I remember on election day, we were standing, you know, right by the doors, right outside of the voting precinct, right here in the hub, and we had, you know, 400 to 500 Trump signs that we handed out all before noon. I mean, the enthusiasm at our table, having all these elected officials come to speak to us, having a conference that we just did, seeing Donald Trump come and talk at the BJC, Dave McCormick do some tailgates, all of those events have, you know, brought forth a lot of membership and a lot of engagement with our group. So we've been very blessed to see the political circumstances work in our favor.
All right, Baybars, I've seen news coverage of angry people for, you know, this, that, and the other thing. I would think maybe has there been a groundswell of extra thing on your side?
Yeah, I think that the incoming Trump presidency has definitely swelled our ranks. I'd say it depends on how you count, but I'm more or less with Ryan, 40, 50 people that are part of the club that take part actively. But yeah, I think that people are fearful. I think that they're angry, and obviously that drives people towards political action. So yes, we have seen a swelling of the ranks.
All right. Well, gentlemen, we're about out of time here. Now, I'm blanking here a little bit. Do you both graduate in May? Baybars, you both graduate in May. So this will be the last time we'll have a chance to talk to you guys. I tell you, I've loved these conversations.
Yes.
And I assume that the people that follow you in your positions will continue conversations, because I'm an old guy, and what I think is different from you, Baybars, or it's necessarily different from you, Ryan, I want to hear those younger perspectives. So, gentlemen, we're out of time, but I appreciate, Ryan, that you're coming. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
And Baybars, you're terrific. I'm going to see your name somewhere, maybe in Russia. France, you're teaching English in France, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, if things work out, but I want to say that I appreciate you having us.
All right, Ironhead, we're done.
Yep, we
Zoom
appreciate
yourself,
it.
We're finished.
Great discussion there. Great perspectives, and really, really appreciate both Ryan and Baybars for taking the time out of their schedule on a day like this to do that for us.